Copper State Marching Podcast, sponsored by the Arizona Marching Band Association, or AZMBA. I'm Aaron Vogel.
And I'm Mark Hodge, and we're thrilled you're joining us for our podcast. We'd like to thank our sponsors, MVP Apparel, Music and Arts, Vic First Siljan, Synced Up Designs, Milano's Music, Music for All, MacPack, Music Celebrations International, SchoolFunder.org, Bravwell Video Creations, LLC, and Yamaha.
The AZMBA Copper State Podcast was created to bring together the Arizona Marching Band community and to connect, educate, and entertain those involved in this wonderful activity. Our goal is to introduce our audience to some of our state's wonderful directors, staff members, and adjudicators, and to promote our circuit and our season's shows. In this episode, we speak with Jeff Guamo, Director of Bands at Chandler High School, and with Rick McEnany, Director of Bands at Flagstaff High School.
Hey, Jeff, welcome to the Copper State Podcast.
Hey, thanks a lot for the invite, guys. My pleasure.
Yeah, Jeff, thanks so much for joining us. And congrats on a great first year at Chandler High. I know, you know, previously you had a great run at Mesa High. For folks that are listening who might not know you, can you tell us just a little bit more about your background?
Sure. Formerly from New York, my wife and I got married in 2004, moved to Arizona so I could start my DMA with Dr. Spring over at ASU. The game plan was 2 years so I could fulfill my residency requirements, and we were going to move back to New York and try for a family, with both our families being back from New York. But here we are a little over 20 years later, and snow is no longer a four-letter word in our vocabulary, so we have no complaints. But Arizona's been very good to us. My wife taught in Mesa District for a decade. And then when we were pregnant with our second, we did the math and realized that her paycheck was basically paying for daycare. So we made the decision to for me to pick up a little bit more work to enable her to stay home and homeschool some of the kids. And then, you know, it's life's always been a journey, but we're happy to be here.
It's great.
Yeah, you know, you were saying that, you know, pick up a little bit more work. I think that a little bit might be an understatement. You know, I know in addition to your day job, you gig as a clarinetist. And we just had texted a little bit earlier talking about the Phoenix Brass Collective and Zazu West and, you know, your community college gigs. Tell us a little bit more about the things you do outside of Chandler High and how you do it all.
Well, I've been teaching privately, doing clarinet lessons for almost 30 years now. Actually, this is the first year that I wasn't able to fit any private teaching into my schedule. You know, I had a discussion with some of my students back before break, and we were going over the definition of lucky and what does it really mean to be lucky? And we came to the conclusion that, you know, some kids said, well, it just means that you were kind of entitled to an opportunity, and that's what luck was. I think it's merely being prepared for an opportunity when it arises. And it just so happens that, you know, when one door shuts, other doors open. And I really was so fortunate to have the tenure that I had at Mesa High with a great principal, very supportive band boosters, good colleagues to work with. I was there for 14 years as department head. And then when the reality of budgetary cuts and contracts not being allowed or no longer being able to be honored came to be, that was kind of a dark place for me there. But some other opportunities that have opened up. Chandler, first of all, this has been a great fit. Very supportive administration, great boosters, kids working hard. And my predecessor, I got to give a shout out to her. She was fantastic in helping to facilitate the transition. So I've been very fortunate and happy with the landing spot here at Chandler, working with some great colleagues over here as well.
So it doesn't sound like you're very busy at all. So I'm going to transition into the reason we have you on this podcast today, and that's show design on a budget. So sure, doing show design on a budget. Understanding that you came from Mesa, you probably have a little more of a budget at Chandler. But let's lean into a little bit on what you did with Mesa High and how you worked their program there.
Well, first of all,
talk us through the program.
Yeah, what is this foreign word you speak of when you say budget? That's kind of foreign to me. I don't know, man. as with many of us as directors, it's hard. during my tenure at Mesa, working with my colleague Robbie Brooks, who has a big background in drum corps, we always prioritized that whatever budget we had available, we were going to try to get the best drill and the best music that we could. That is your product that you will be living with and that you will be sharing with the kids for up to 5, 6 months, you know? So you want to make sure that that is in the forefront. So when it comes to whatever money we had available, we always prioritized in trying to hire what we feel could give us a unique product. We've been working with composer Seth Woodard during all of my tenure at Mesa. So for 14 years, we worked with Seth. This year was my first year at Chandler. We worked with Seth as well. Another thing that I like about working with Seth is that as long as you approach him with the project early enough in advance, you can get something that's personalized. And I've always felt that when designing a show, you know, we've seen these shows where it's, I guess, well, maybe not a Star Wars show because you can't get away with the rights and having your color guard duel with lightsabers and spin them, you know, but we, or a pirate show where you get a ship out there and you're doing Pirates of the Caribbean or something like that. We've seen shows that are entertainment value, but I've always tried to think of a show with more of a more profound meaning. Sometimes even a way that there is no real right answer. During my tenure at Mesa, Robbie and I would always get a kick out of people that would come up to us and say, "You know, I really enjoyed it in your show. I saw that you went for this." And Robbie and I kind of look at each other like, "Well, that wasn't what we were thinking." But yeah, you got one. Thanks. Yeah.
Of
So I
course
think a
you
show,
would.
yeah, I think a show that has you really thinking about it and gives you a chance to have discussions not only on the field that are pertinent on the field or on the concert stage, but also, you know, for these kids and their families and going home. I think that something that could prompt some prominent life lesson discussions, I think, is worthwhile. Our show this year at Chandler was entitled "I Hope," and it was conceived by a letter written to actually to Robbie's unborn child at the time. My daughter was newborn; she was a year old at the time. This is back in like 2011, 2012, and Robbie and Lisa Ann were excited and pregnant with their first, and we were having a discussion about, you know, Robbie was wondering what it's going to be like to be a parent, and for the first time, and kind of sat down and penned up a letter of all these things that were on our mind right then about what we hope for our children. You know, I hope you learn to appreciate good work ethic. I hope you learn to find love. I hope you learn to find companionship. All these life lessons, and what we didn't realize is that that was going to become a marching show. So when coming to Chandler and having thoughts as to what's the first show to do here, I thought I wanted something that would really resonate with the parents and with the kids and the community. So we kind of rekindled the idea of I Hope. I reached out to Seth and asked if we could get the music. I rewrote a few things in there, but really enjoyed working on it and the message that it gave us the opportunity to discuss that, you know, for high school kids to think about not only what they're doing that day, but also to think about what they can do at the end of the day when they get a chance to go home and see their families and what they might think about for their tenure and their prospects after high school. So when you're talking about budget for a show, sorry if I got off on a little bit of tangent. I got a little heartstrung there thinking about show concepts. But I think when directors talk passionately about some of their products and the messages that it can send and share, I mean, as teachers, we always look for those life lessons. And I think this art form that we have in the marching arts, it lends itself beautifully to being able to provoke some of these types of discussions. So to cut to the chase on budget, anything that can be done to make sure you got a really strong product, drill wise and music. Now from there, people always are enamored with props. You know, they think that general effect is about the biggest props. Honestly, nothing's going to be effective if it's not played well and if it's not moved well. And I think that's a very important lesson that I think any young director could hear because, you know, we all see the drum corps shows over the summer and we all get excited about that and we think about, oh, that would be something really cool to try to bring back in some capacities to the fall season. But just trying to make it so that the kids prioritize their level of musicianship and then being proud of their product, I think is very important. So people sometimes try to think of all the money that they can budget for props. I think focus on the music. With that said, even using Seth, there's been a lot of times where we've needed to rewrite music. We've needed to rewrite drill. And I think that there's a lot of directors that I don't want to say they're afraid to, but I think they're hesitant to. They're definitely capable of rewriting. No one's better suited to rewrite for your band than the director. You know your kids. And if you see that there's clarinets doubling with the flutes and the piccolos all in the same octave out on the field for 16 measures, that might not be the best thing for you. So there's nothing wrong with, reharmonizing a little bit and rewriting on the fly. I was talking with Beth Fabrizio a few months ago, and she gave me a comment that's resonated with me. And she said, "Well, Jeff, you're a parent." And I was like, "Yes, I am, Beth." And we kind of joked about it a bit. And she said, "Well, when it comes to a show, why sit in a dirty diaper for 4 or 5 months? Change that thing." And it resonated with me. I mean, we were both laughing about it because it's so true. How many times in when judging, I've had the opportunity to talk, and critique with directors, and I say, "Well, do you feel like this is really working for you musically?" And they say, "Well, no, but that's what we got." And I said, "Well, why don't you change it? You got 2 months. You got 2.5 months. Are you going to live with it for the next 2.5 months if you already have admitted that it might not work for you? Or are you going to try it? Try to change it?" And never be afraid to change stuff up if you think it's going to be for the betterment of your kids and for the product. So as far as budget, I believe in focusing on music, making sure that's going to be a great statement and a great product to work with. Props, I say put that lower on the totem pole. If you do use props, try to find creative ways to use the props. We had a couple of simple staircases that we used at Chandler this year, and we used it to hide guard gear where we would put the flags and put the rifles in the back of it. We used it to have kids actually stand up on for featuring soloists. We also turned them sideways and had them painted so that they could have one color scheme. And then when they turned the other way, they had another color scheme. So I've always felt you can get more bang for your buck if you can figure out what little bit of props you can actually afford to put on the field, if you can find a unique way to use them. There was 1 year at Mesa where we had all we really had was a giant tarp. And the name of the show that year was Unbroken. I want to say it was 2016 or 2017, one of the years when we actually were a BOTA state championships. I think we're in a ASU at that time. But we didn't know really what to do with this tarp. So we thought, well, the name of the show is Unbroken. What if we had it broken apart and then the kids kind of laid down and filled in the gaps at the end? And it looked like it kind of refilled it. And then as we got closer and closer to it, we realized that's not really going to work design-wise for us. So then we had the idea of, instead of doing that, why don't we cut the tarp up into little tiny circles? And every single circle could be painted so it looks like shattered glass. But when you stack the pro the circles on top of each other just right, they make an image. And we ended up having them make a face when all they were kind of layered just right. And the whole point of the show was that the name was titled Unbroken. But the point was that you're never truly broken. It's all just a matter of how you look at things that are in front of you and how you can work with what you have to work with. So at the end of the show, when the kids start picking up the tarps and layering them at the end, the judges were kind of funny on the tapes. They were like, "Oh my gosh, it's a face. Now I see it." But that was an example of, it was an old dirty tarp that, we were ready to throw out, but we thought, no, let's try to get one more use out of it. So I think if you look around what you have on campus, you may be surprised. If you talk to your welding teacher, your shop teacher, your wood shop teacher, you'd be surprised some of the collaborative efforts that we've been able to do over the years while I was and during my tenure at Mesa. On the average, we wouldn't spend much budget on props at all. We would really try to focus on the music and on the drill. So sorry if I got a little long-winded and kind of took that on a roundabout, but I hope that answers your question.
Oh, it answers it really well. At this point in the podcast, we like to, you gave us a lot of good information, but we like to give you some time to do shout outs for your colleagues, people around you,
Oh, thank you.
because this is
Thank
a
you.
video. I mean, this goes out in video and in audio, so it's going to get out to the people who you want to,
Well,
throw some love to.
with all this said, first of all, I really appreciate and I applaud the efforts that you two have made on this. AIA brings interest from parents, from administrators to all the sporting standings and events. And I think what you two have done with this podcast has been great for the state, for the students, and for the art form. Just how it brings more light to it. I understand you might be going with like a current top 10 listing or something like that for this upcoming season. I think all those are great ideas. I think what you've done has been beautiful. And I got to be honest, I didn't even realize you guys were doing the podcast until some of my students this year said, "Hey, check out this link at this time mark." They actually give a shout out, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, let me see this." So the kids were noticing it before I was. So I think that's exciting, and I think what you guys are doing is fantastic. I think we have a very unique thing going here in Arizona. I've worked with AMEA with their solo and ensemble festival, and worked hand in hand with Mr. Vogel right there for many years on this. Thank you. And I've gotten to network with a lot of people across the state in doing so. And I think that in this state, there is such a collaborative effort with all of our band directors that is really unprecedented, because I have some current, well, former students of mine that are currently teaching in Texas. And they said it's not as collaborative a process over there, that a lot of times directors will kind of keep to themselves and hide their treasures, so to speak. But here, I think we've got such a great knit community with the directors, and it's just been a pleasure working with them. With that said, there's definitely some people that I want to give a shout out to. Definitely a good friend of mine, Jeff Whipple, who's been great. I think he's been a great asset for the marching arts in this state of Arizona, not only as a collaborative designer, but as drill writer as well. Fantastic human being. I also want to thank some of my current colleagues here at Chandler, current administration. I want to thank my previous colleagues in administration over at Mesa. And of course, I thank you for giving me the opportunity to give a shout out to my wife, who calls herself a fall widow every single year, come around July. But my wife is quite the blessing. She's like I said, I'm a father of five. She's the mother of five, and she's home with them. And she as a professional musician herself, as a fellow clarinetist, and as a director herself for 10 years, she had a great marching experience back in New York during her high school tenure at Marcus Whitman. And so she's really enamored with the marching arts, and she loves going to the Winter Guard shows right now. We call that date night, when we can actually hire a babysitter so she and I can go see my daughter go to the Chandler Winter Guard right now. So I have a lot of fun with that. But she's been quite the saint, and she supports me in my endeavorments to try to do some of the extra musical things, whether it's with the community colleges like at MCC. In fact, this year she's even playing with me in the MCC clarinet ensemble that I'm running, so that's a lot of fun. I forgot, I want to give a shout out to some of our staff members that we've had here at Chandler, and one in particular, Austin Yost, who's been a great asset. He does the Oasis Guard program, which has serviced so many kids in the area. Austin stepped in this year when I was in need of somebody to help out with our Winter Guard program. He said, "Hey, I remember working with you during our tenure at Mesa together, and if you need somebody, I'd be happy to help you out." That was awfully kind of him to come back. We've had a lot of fun working together this winter season. So thanks for giving me the opportunity to give a shout out to my wife and administrators and colleagues, past and present. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, Jeff. And thank you for taking the time to do this call. And it's I really appreciate hearing your passion for the shows that you've done, in the past. And we're looking forward to seeing next year's Chandler show. I'm sure it's going to be fantastic.
We're looking forward to it. We got some ideas, but we'll see what ends up finally cooking up. So
Don't give it
thanks, man.
away. That's the part that's fun, trying to guess.
Well, we're trying, so thank you.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeff.
We'd like to welcome Rick McEnany, band director of Flagstaff High School. Welcome, Rick. How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Rick, thanks so much for joining us. You've had just an incredible career as a band director and as administrator. Mark and I know that, but for folks who are listening right now who might not know you, can you tell our audience just a little bit about you, about your background?
Well, sure. This is year 38, I think, for me. I grew up in Tucson, went to U of A, and graduated from there. Taught at Canyon Dollar High School, and then moved to Clark County, Nevada, which is the Las Vegas area. Taught there for 6 years. Got my master's degree at UNLV, and then came back to NAU as the associate director of bands. And I was there as the ADB, and then music ed faculty, and got my doctorate. Then I went back to Clark County as the fine arts coordinator for the school district. So that was for band, orchestra, choir, drama, dance, guitar, mariachi. And yeah. And
Say that three times fast.
yeah, right, exactly. Then was there, did that job for 16 years. The spring of, I think it was, I don't know, I can't remember, the year of COVID, or the year before COVID, rather. CCSD had an early retirement package, and FUSD flew a job for Flag High School, and Flagstaff was one of the three places on our list where we were going to retire, so it seemed like kismet. And so we're back, and I originally took a part-time job at Flag High School, and then as these things go, here we are, back in the saddle again.
Nice. Well, what's your role at Flagstaff High School? What's your current course load?
Current course load is two bands, two orchestras, and color guard.
Very cool. Well, I wanted to tell you, I saw a Summit High School band from Arlington, Texas. They were at the
Travis. Is that Travis's band?
it's Travis.
Travis, yep.
Yeah, it's
Yeah.
Travis, really. Yeah. And he wanted to say hi. And his assistant is Beth Hermanson, and both of them are NAU grads.
Right.
And yeah, Travis said he knew you from your fine arts coordinator role, so he just wanted to say hi.
Oh, that's terrific. Hope he's doing well.
Awesome. Well, hey, we wanted to transition into our podcast topic for today, which is called Show Design on a Budget. So just wanted to talk you have you talk to us, I should say, about what's worked for your programs in terms of budgeting for the fall marching show and what suggestions you would have for our audience.
Well, it's a really interesting question, because I've taught big urban high school, which had a very competitive marching programs, and the place I'm at now, which is entirely the antithesis of that. We're not exactly a rural school here in Flagstaff, but it's a small school, and as with most schools that are of our size and location, most of our kids are involved with a lot more than just band or orchestra. So the community here very much values the band and very much values the marching band. But it is far more our goal here and our fo function here is that we are a school community-based activity, and we support the community and the community supports us. There's no real what's the word I should say here? There's no real desire here for the kids not to be able to do being well we Let's put it this way. I have members from every winter and fall sport varsity level are in the band or color guard, every single one of them. And we just could not do that unless we had a schedule and worked really hard with the other coaches. So we do the band here at Flag High School, we do Friday night football games, home games, and we do band day, and we take a trip at the end of the season down to watch our division at state. And that is our marching band. And the marching band has grown. My retention rate doing it this way is way north of 95% of the kids that can come back do.
Nice.
And we have recruited new kids into the program every single year for 6 years. So it really has been a reaction because this is not my history with marching band. They say my history was with big urban marching band. So it really has been kind of an idea of you listening to the community, listening to the administration, and finding out what their needs are and what they want. And we go to band day, and what we used to call the execution scores, I don't know what we call them now, but are terrific, and the kids get great crowd response, and that's the same at every football game. They come home from every football game completely jazzed at the crowd and the fact that the Flagstaff High School community really supports each other.
So, when going into that, doing the show on the budget, being that you've had both sets of budgets, like with Flagstaff High, talk to us a little bit about the music and the drill. Like, what are you doing now with that? And not necessarily how much you spent, because that's irrelevant. It's more about the quality, quantity, and things like that. So, talk about that.
Sure. So at Flag High, and then I'll circle back to the competitive side of things. But at Flag High, what we do is our goal is to have something new in every show. And we build our show towards the band day show. So that doesn't mean that everything is new every year or every year, good, every week, like in the, in the grand old days, which weren't so grand, but it is something new, something, there's a new drill or there's a new tune or there's a new something every week. We also very much involved every football game. We have at least the cheer team and the dance team that perform along with us as part of our show. They also go to Band Aid with us. Oftentimes, we have other groups and clubs from the school that are involved in the halftime show. So our repertoire reflects whatever it is we need to highlight that week. And then they say as we build in towards the Band Aid show. So in this case, most of the stuff we do is stock arrangements with some edits for my. What we have for strengths and weaknesses in our group. I have a really talented young percussion guy who works in our district, who works with the band, and he does the percussion. He takes the stock stuff, but he does percussion edits. And a lot of the stock stuff is older, so bringing it kind of into the 21st century and getting it, but once again, writing specifically for our kids to be successful with it. So we do that. There's very little that we have to go through with copyright because of that. But what we do, we've used a couple of different services, which I won't go into. I'm not plugging anybody, but we've done that to make sure that we're in copyright compliance with everything we do. And I write the drill. I've always written my own drill from the time I was in college. I wrote drill at U of A and have done that for drum corps and do that for my own. And luckily I'm married to the best guard instructor in the state. So
This
that
is
really
true.
helps.
This
Let me
is very
tell you.
true. She's been doing it almost as long as you have, so it's true. Great.
So that's been, we get to work together on that. And that's always been a big part of our lives together is being able to do that activity, with the kids and with each other. Interesting how many band directors, particularly high school band directors, are married to elementary school teachers. And I have a thought that that's probably because they're one of the few groups on the planet that have enough patience to put up with us.
That's
That's absolutely
right.
true. My wife would attest to that also.
Absolutely.
Well, on the show side, you're doing a show, you're building up to Band A, you're writing your own drill. What about like talk us through maybe like flags or costuming? How do you budget for that? And do you do a new flag each time, or is it something that you use what's around?
So a little of both. So we do have a theme for our Band Aid show that we build into. This year it was Elton John. Last year it was The Incredibles. The year before it was our 100th anniversary of the school. So we do pick music built around a theme for each show, and then the color guard uniform reflects that theme. We've done all the things you just said. We've had new uniforms made. We've had new flags. We do have a new flag each year. We do flag and rifle for our color guard, and then, like I said, we also have the dance team and the cheer team with us as auxiliaries. Most years we have a twirler. We have a very vibrant twirling program here in Flagstaff that's run by a remarkable lady who's been doing it for a long time. So this will be the first year we don't have twirlers because there were no eighth graders coming up, but next year we'll have twirlers again. And so the flag, Lynn, the flag, our flag person, and Tamara, and they get together and coordinate the flag and twirler aspects of things. The marching band uniform, it's just very standard high school marching band uniform. We have put some accessories with it from time to time, but not a lot. It's all pretty much things that we can buy off the rack, that we can have parents help us with creating enough for the kids. When we had 10, we started the color guard with 10 kids, and now we're at 30 kids. So it's a bigger deal now with trying to do that. So buying things off the rack for us is it's just more time effective. Just not a lot of folks out there anymore that can whip up 30 flags, in their living room.
Yeah,
Like they
well,
used
congrats on
to, yeah.
that. And 30 flags is more money. It's that it's such a blessing to have more kids, but then all of a sudden it's like, well, we need to then purchase
Right.
equipment for all these
Equipment
gigs.
and uniforms and yeah, all of that. So we have a stock now of we the guard with our guard we have a basic black kind of oh there's a word for it. They're pants, but they look like a skirt. And that's the, we base it off of that and a white bodysuit, and then we just accessorize the tops each year. So we've just had white sparkly. We've had school color for the 100th anniversary show. We did a big school color thing, which is not easy to do with green and brown. But all of it has been stuff that we keep and we have reused in other incarnations throughout the years.
Cool.
So, because we have Lynn and all that, does she do most of the choreography with the band, or do you do that from your past experience, or does she kind of help design and develop that? And how much is too much choreography, or how much is not enough?
So with choreography, do you mean the band students' body
Yeah,
movement, not
body
marching? Okay.
movement, things like that, yeah.
Yeah. So some of that comes from Lynn, some of that comes from, keeping abreast of the activity through Drum Corps and BOA. This year we were really lucky. We've added a member to our staff, Kira Guscott, Kaya Guscott, and she is has a lot of experience in dance and has been a real help with doing that. Due to my age and background, we march more than we use alternative body, but we had a lot more this year, and the kids really loved it, having it in there. Plus, I'm a big believer in, we're writing shows for the halftime crowd. And so anything you can do that is novel or new or something they're not expecting, it's always a good thing. And body is certainly a great way to achieve that. And so we do it now. We do it. We're doing it more and more all the time.
Did you kind of going back to your previous experience in the urban bands, did you guys start going to performance tops away from the traditional uniform when you were in Vegas?
Well, a lot of the bands that I was facilitating new uniforms for did, yes. Although not nearly as much in the last, because the last 6 years I've been here doing this, so the performance top thing has really been in the last 10 years more so than before. So my personal experience with that is very, very limited. The uniforms we have at Flag High were bought 4 or 5 years before I got there. We take really good care of them. It's a huge purchase. And up here, quite frankly, they're comfortable because, even in September up here, it's cold enough outside that you can wear your marching band uniforms and not worry about the kids stroking out.
That's
Yep.
true.
Well, I remember going up one of the first years that we had performance tops. We went up for the Music for All BOA championships that was up there. And before going on for finals, it was evening, I think, on the first weekend of October, and the kids were freezing. They were in their band top, what's now the, a very common trend with the performance tops. And the performance tops by nature are lighter, cheaper. And lighter, which is very nice in the valley because it's 110 degrees, but up there they were very cold. So the band actually added a jacket, a warm-up jacket, like what the color guard had done for a number of years, to the whole band just for that show, to be honest, and for the end of the season here in the valley. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, and that's we do the performance tops for our guard too, and then we have the warm up suits so they can, be comfortable. But that's what we change out with the color guard.
Yeah, it's cold. Hey, Rick, thanks so much for taking time to just, chat with us a little bit about your experience, and I really hope folks get a lot from these podcasts if they're checking them out. We like to end, we have a tradition here where we end with shout outs. This is just anyone that you'd like to, give a shout out to here at the end of the call.
Oh my gosh. Well, wow. That's a long list. I've been at this a long time.
Just maybe the last 10 years.
last 10 years. Okay. Well, the last 10 years wouldn't have happened without Tom Leslie and Jim Keane and Rick Clary, the three of those folks, and Tim Salzman. Really set the foundation for everything that I've done since in my career. So I'd have to say that. But the biggest shout out, of course, has got to go to Lynn. If it weren't for her, I wouldn't have been able to do any of this stuff and have the life I've had.
Well, that's great. I'd actually like to give a shout out to you myself because you were a great inspiration to me as a young band director at the U of A or coming out of U of A. I kind of tried to model my programs after what I saw you doing at CDO. So thanks for your work back then and your work all the way through the time. So just appreciate all you did for the program or for the art form, so to speak.
Well, that's very kind. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Rick. And to our audience, thank you for listening to our podcast. We really hope everyone listening is having a fantastic concert season, starting to plan for next fall, and of course having great performances with their concert, Winter Guard, Inner Percussion, if you're doing that. Our next podcast is going to be all about setting your color guard up for success, and we're going to be interviewing Keith Casey. He's having a great season, another great season at Desert Vista High School. And Brandon DuBose King, who's from ASU and DCI's the Blue Knights. You won't want to miss it. Thanks, everyone, and bye.